Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hall of Fame coaches, national champions, lottery picks, the best minds in basketball. Welcome into the sidelines with Evan Daniels.
What is up, college basketball fans? Welcome back into the Sidelines podcast. I'm your host, Evan Daniels, college basketball insider at FS1, as well as the director of basketball recruiting at 24/7 Sports. After a brief summer hiatus with the summer evaluation periods and a trip to see the European Championships over in Europe, the podcast is back, and we're going to kick things off with a legendary guest, FS1 college basketball analyst and college basketball staple, Bill Raftery. Raftery and I talked about a variety of things, but mainly focused on the new NCAA rules that just came out that really impact the landscape. I got his thoughts and what he thinks about them. He shared some of his own ideas, and then we briefly discussed the Kentucky Wildcats' trip to the Bahamas. Before I get to that conversation with Bill Raftery, I want to make sure that you are supporting the Sidelines with Evan Daniels podcast. The best way for you to do that is to shoot over to Apple Podcasts and or your favorite podcast app. Make sure you're subscribed. Make sure you leave a message, a rating, a review. You can also shoot me a note over on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at Evan Daniels. Would love to know what you think about the podcast. Now let's jump to that conversation with Fox Sports college basketball analyst, Bill Raftery.
It's time to go Minute with Evan Daniels. Send it in, big fella.
Now I want to welcome a colleague of mine and someone I've looked up to a great deal over the years, the illustrious Bill Raftery. Welcome to the Sidelines with Evan Daniels podcast, your second time on the show.
Yeah, how about that? I'm getting close to double figures, huh?
Soon enough. How's your off season been?
You know, pretty relaxing. A little travel here and there. You know, not a whole lot going on. I was in Vegas with USA Basketball for the fantasy camp, so I got a chance to see the Olympic trial guys. It was during that July evaluation period, interestingly enough. So we saw a lot of the college guys. So I guess that's going to change from what I'm reading.
Yeah. We're going to get in here in a minute. It's quite the changes. And honestly, the college basketball season really isn't that far away. In fact, it starts 2.5 months from now with the Champions Classic on November 6th. And before we get into those rule changes that you mentioned, I'm kind of curious, when and how do you start preparing for the college season?
I was really impressed with Kentucky, as anybody would be, because of the, now they've got experience. They've got young people every year who can play, but you throw the Travis kid into the mix, it probably gives him a nice low post presence that, he knows what to do once he gets it, having 18, 19 points a game, Pac-12 player of the year kind of. So I have one freshman who I just knows how to play, the hero kid. He's great without the ball. He's unselfish, pull-up game, just handles it nicely. So, you throw in those other greats for them, like Washington, I think, is bigger and stronger. Knows how to pass it well. So, like always, Kentucky's going to be in the mix this year. I think John's got 10 or 11 at some point that he can play.
Yeah, they're deep this year, too, Raf. And I think you mentioned Hero. I'm going to throw something at you. I think that he's got a little Devin Booker to him. I'm not saying he's going to be as good as Devin, but I think he could have that type of impact on that team. And I think last year they were missing a guy that could really make shots. And while Hero's a shooter, he's more than just a knockdown guy. He's pretty versatile in his ability to score.
He reminds you quite a bit of Larry Bird in that his total package. I think Booker was better coming off screens, but don't forget, this kid's going to learn. So that comparison, if he can stroke it like him, my goodness, what a dimension that gives him.
But I wanted to jump into these rule changes, Raf, and I'm curious to get your kind of take on everything. Obviously, earlier this month, the NCAA announced a number of changes to their bylaws, the recruiting calendar, and even opened up the possibility of players getting agents if they were deemed elite. I guess to start, did you think that the NCAA needed to kind of step in and make some changes after the FBI investigation last year?
You know, there's so many things that have been going on for years that, you know, who controls basketball? And it's certainly not the NCAA, you know, at this point. So I think the shoe companies' influence, outside agents' influence, has also, you know, changed sort of the tenor or the outlook. And I think what they tried to do with this evaluation period being eliminated, maybe curtailed the shoe company somewhat. You know, all of this is contingent, I believe, particularly the agent, of the one-and-done rule going through, if I'm not mistaken. But once you get an agent and you decide to go back to school, you cannot have that agent anymore. I think the underlying problem to me has always been somebody who befriends this kid or his family. They're recognized late in grades, and things are done. I still don't know how you control that. Where that influence is there, and ultimately the hope of an agent is to have that young man choose him when they're finished or choose those he's working for. So I think there's been an attempt, and probably some will have to be refined, understanding of having outside influences. For example, if there's an investigation by any outside agency because the NCAA is really restricted and what they can and cannot do in investigations, they can't take people, for example. That is certainly going to help them determine those that have done some bad things. So a lot of good is probably in it, and probably a long way to go too, Evan, I think. I think they just have to keep plotting away, and hopefully the Players Association and the NBA will go along with them and the USA Basketball too.
Yeah, no, what you were alluding to at the end is maybe the biggest thing and the biggest change here, requiring presidents and chancellors and athletic staff members to contractually comply with the investigations. And then also the NCAA is now allowed to use information and finding from outside investigations in their infractions process. Do you think having these type of bylaws will make coaches second guess themselves potentially doing something they shouldn't?
Well, I don't know if they'll second-guess them. So I don't know if it's the coaches as much as others.
Yeah.
Some of these cases, people might think a coach is naive, but there's some kids who have been charmed, and families under the influence of an outside agent that doesn't really prey, P-R-E-Y, on where this kid goes or why he goes. So I think ultimately, the school is responsible, but there's cases where they have no idea that something's been done behind or, not according to Hoyle. But I do think the school's being responsible and all these legal implications, a lot more people, if they want to play in this underhanded way, are going to be caught. And they're going to be out of the coaching business. So I do think there's going to be some examples made as we pursue or they pursue this kind of road down to cleaning up the game.
For sure. Now, I think one area that I agreed with some of the changes was with the ability for players to return to college if they don't get drafted. I actually think that's great for the sport.
The only problem, Evan, and I agree with you totally, is that what do you do now if you've offered a scholarship to somebody? Who gets hurt, the incoming kid or the returning kid? They are going to have to address that and say, well, if he comes back, we're going to add another scholarship on. Somebody's going to get hurt in this unless they address that as well. I don't know what you think about that.
No, I agree with you. Somebody's definitely going to get hurt, and part of the problem too is with guys being able to come back if they want, if they don't get drafted. You know, sometimes, as you said, coaches have moved on and have offered scholarships, and other kids are coming in. But then also, there's this sense of like starting July, where there's not a full roster in place, or the end of June, you don't know what your roster makeup is going to be. And honestly, By July, it's really hard to add a significant piece or move around your roster. So I do think that that's certainly an issue, but it sounds like that's just something that the college guys are going to just have to adjust to and figure out.
Right. No, but again, I can just imagine some young guy coming into whatever school you want to pick, Southern Cal, and they've got a full 13 complement of scholarship kids, and whoever decides, well, you know what, I'm not good enough.
What's going to happen is the guy that's the 13th best player on that bench is going to get run off.
Well, that's what I think they'll address that. I don't think you can do that. I think, there's some moral obligations in when you make a commitment. So I do think that's something they'll look into.
I think one of the other big changes is in terms of the recruiting calendar, Raf. And you mentioned you were out in Vegas during the third evaluation period. I was out there as well. Honestly, when it comes to the recruiting changes and the recruiting calendar changes, it felt like to me that they just made changes just to make changes. I don't know if the changes they made, or I don't believe that the changes they made impact what they think the issues are. Now, I know you mentioned the shoe companies and them trying to curtail that. And what they've done is they've basically changed the July recruiting periods from 3 to 2, but only one of those can be an AAU period. The other is going to be a camp. And then they opened up MBPA Top 100 camp in June and then added 2 high school weekends. Well, what was kind of your thoughts and reaction to, basically it seems like they're trying to get rid of AAU?
I think everything's well-intentioned. And, you know, it casts dispersions on the AAU. We all know there's some really good people involved and coaches. I think the guys that are going to get hurt are those kids who are, you know, maybe rated in the 200s, who yep. all of a sudden got a little more exposure and got an opportunity to really show their wares. So I think things are going to happen. A lot of those kids are going to choose schools that are not quite the top 20 schools basketball-wise. And within a year or two, they're going to say, you know what? Somebody's going to come in and say, come on over to my school. We're one of the top programs in the country. So I think we're going to have a lot of movement from kids who end up going to a maybe lesser acclaimed university basketball-wise and end up you hear the dog here barking at me. But anyway, I think there's a lot of – I'm up with the kids up in Rhode Island, so I'm getting some help. But this is probably the best interview you've had with this dog.
It's awesome.
But I think that's part of the deal, though. I think, you know, for everything you do, there's some shortcomings. So I think they'll just continually address this, modify, maybe add on. I think those are some of the things that they're trying to do. And I don't think you can do it all at once. The biggest thing I've heard in terms of a complaint from outside agencies is the financial end of this thing. It's like, well, they've done nothing to address somebody who's done nicely basketball-wise and deserves some piece of the pie type of thing. And I just don't know how they're ever going to address that, simply because of if I have a son or daughter that plays a minor sport in terms of the university, whether it's swimming or volleyball, everybody's going to step up, whether it's a man or a woman. So I think that's one area they've got criticized for, but I just don't know how you ever address this financially.
No, it's certainly a
university that could ever afford it.
No question. It's a major topic, and it seemed like from reading stories and Twitter, everybody was pretty disappointed that they didn't address it. Obviously, there's some difficulties there. And by the way, I completely agree with what you said in terms of the guys that maybe get lost in the shuffle with the recruiting calendar change is those mid and low major players that are trying to earn a scholarship or trying to prove themselves as maybe a more high caliber player than what they're currently being recruited as. Like Raf, this year there was probably 8 to 10 guys that moved from outside the top 200 into the top 100, 150, and now being recruited as high major players. I think those guys are going to be the ones that are getting lost in the shuffle in this new format. Because I don't see how a camp of 800 players is going to I just think that's going to be so difficult. I think it's going to be hard for coaches to move around. And the whole high school weekend segment, I definitely disagree with. I'm not even sure that there's high school coaches that want that.
Right, right. I think the tweaking is going to continue to have, you know, the more you do something and out of the goodness of your heart and with great analysis, it's only a step in the process. And I think that's, you know, meetings with people like you and high school and AAU, of course, the elephant in the room is always the Players Association. We know, not in the evaluation period, but in some of these concrete statements or advances that, particularly with the elite players, their fingerprints have to be on it. But I just think it's like, okay, that's a good start. Let's keep moving forward. And I think that's what they're probably thinking. Let's get through this next summer. Let's hear the complaints. Let's see what direction we can go. And getting back to the finances, you know, the one thing I thought that might be possible, and I don't know how, again, you eliminate people who have played other sports and would like to get, obviously gain some financial support. But I do think if there's something to be done where each year there's an X, for example, if you go to West Point or the Naval Academy, you know, I believe when you graduate, there's X amount of dollars that you've accrued. I was just wondering if a young man plays for a year and they could do something in terms of a financial reward when he finishes school. If he goes 2 years, there's a little more, 3 years, a little more, not as an incentive to stay, but the realization he might not be good enough. And yet, his marquee name becomes valued and people have an interest in what he's done. And I just think that might be something that could be thought about to make it a little nicer for kids. And then if there's an emergency at home during that period that he's in school, that will be looked into and they could assist the family in any way they could. So I think there's a lot of thoughts that different people have. And you talk to quite a few of the people in the basketball world. And I think at some point, a lot of these are going to be crystallized and only help move in the right direction eventually.
For sure. And one thing we mentioned or discussed briefly earlier, Raf, is the agents and their involvement and kids possibly being able to sign with agents. And that's contingent on the NBA and the Players Association opening it up and allowing kids to go straight from high school to the NBA. And I do think that's going to happen. It sounds like it's not going to happen before the 2021 class. So that's a ways away from now. Do you think, or is your preference that it opens up in that way?
Well, I mentioned that earlier that, that's the cooperation. I think Adam Silver has come out saying that would be an ideal. And I honestly think, Evan, and you've seen these great players. I don't get to see them too much until they get into school. There's only a handful of kids that we're talking about.
For sure.
That are really elite status that could be lottery picks. I mean, you count them every year. And now there's some kids maybe second or third year that have gotten into that. But coming out of high school, there's only a couple. There's very few LeBron James, let's face it. But there's a lot of very talented kids, but they're of a limited number. The NBA is not going to give money away if you can't play. They're not going to spec your ability. This kid could be good 4 years from now. Although they do stockpile education, as we've seen, too, where they say, why is he leaving? And, they want to get the meter going, too, in terms of financial rewards at the end of that rookie contract. So I just think that's a great move forward. If a young guy feels he's good enough and there's an opportunity, I think that takes the pressure off a lot of, certainly the NCAA and a lot of programs.
For sure. I completely agree. Raf, you excited about the upcoming season?
Got a helicopter advertising here on the beach, so my concentration is not what it should be. Am I excited? Yeah, it's funny. We always talk about the blue bloods, and I just think what's great about the NCAA tournament is that we have seen they don't necessarily they're not handed a championship either, because you have so many programs where guys are 3 and 4 year guys, sometimes 5. That have played together. They're a little more mature. They're a little more resilient. They just have maybe an inner confidence of playing together or a tough-mindedness. But the excitement every year is just, it's become something well, it's special, obviously, but the level of talent at a young age is what just—it's just utterly incredible. I can remember years and years ago where he's only a sophomore, you know, wait till he's a junior or senior. You know, geez, these kids come in, they are ready, they are talented, and I think part of it is attributable to that AAU circuit where they've competed, they've developed a confidence. It's just not reading about somebody that's competing against them, and they feel they're as good, if not better. So I don't think this condemnation totally of the Summer League or the AAU is warranted. And I think just keep moving in that direction where add some things, delete them. That didn't work. Let's see what we can do better. And I think we'll see a consortium at some point of all the groups we've alluded to during this podcast that, sit down and make it better and make it as good as you can make it and just eliminate those that want to play by their own rules, basically.
No, I think you're dead on, and hopefully, you know, the NCAA looks back and tweaks this and adjusts this, and obviously what they did was well intentioned, and hopefully they look back and just are constructive with this and really make an initiative to try to get this better and the best way for every kid possible, not just the top 10 kids that are that it seems to be focused on. So. Raph, right. I appreciate your time, man. I'm looking forward to seeing you during the season.
Always enjoy chatting with you. Keep up your great work. And keep filling me up with all those stories about all these players. You make all of us look better.
I appreciate you, Raph. Have a great day, man.
Take care. Bye-bye now.
This is Aaron Rodgers.
They're going to air it out. Rodgers does this better than anybody. End zone. Cobb. Touchdown. Unbelievable. The Green Bay Packers have won the Super Bowl.
And you're listening to The Sidelines with Evan Daniels.
We'd like to once again thank Bill Raftery for taking the time out and jumping on the Sidelines podcast. Enjoyed that conversation with him and getting his thoughts and feedback on these new NCAA rules. I think the rules that probably impact this whole deal from a recruiting aspect the most is obviously the shift in the recruiting calendar. And while I think, like Raftery said, that the rule changes were well-intentioned, I think they really missed the mark with the recruiting calendar. Moving to just one AAU weekend, I think is a mistake, and I think it's going to impact a lot of kids of the low and mid-major variety, and I want to kind of get to a point. This past summer was a summer of risers in July. There were a number of players that really stepped up in that month, primarily in the second and third evaluation periods, and moved from low and mid-major recruits to priority high major recruits. Guys like Robbie Baran, who's going to be ranked among the top 50 players in the country in the 24/7 Sports top 24/7. Caden Shedrick entered July as a mid-major player. He is now committed to Virginia. Cole Bajima entered July as a mid-major prospect. He's now committed to Michigan. Now, obviously, these guys were talented coming into July, but they hadn't had an opportunity to be seen. You know, Robbie Baran played on an AAU team called Garner Road Team Richmond. Caden Shedrick played on a different Garner Road team. Cole Bajima played for a team called Friends of Hoop. There's another kid from Canada, up near Alaska, Liam McChesney. Happened to see him in the middle of the last period, 6'9", power forward, at least a high mid-level prospect, potentially a high major prospect. The only offer he had, Eastern Washington. Gonzaga goes in and see him. Washington goes in to see him. Minnesota goes in to see him. A number of others go in to see him. I believe that UCLA has called on him. So now this kid's recruitment has taken off a little. And without that last period, it would have never happened. So the new rules have opened up MBPA Top 100 camp for college coaches. They've added two high school weekends. They have one AAU weekend at the beginning of July, and then a camp at the end of the July. Now, I will preface this by saying I'm not a lover of camps when it comes to evaluating basketball players. I think that that's where you make the most mistakes. They're not familiar with each other. If you're a big man, it's not a good look. You're not going to get a lot of touches. I'll say this. I think the best camp to evaluate at is the USA basketball camps. They put the kids in competitive situations. They're competing for something. They're playing for something. They're playing to make a team. So I'm very curious how they structured these camps. If it becomes four regional camps with 200 kids each, I think it's going to be difficult for everyone involved. It's going to be difficult for coaches to evaluate the right players for their system. I think it's going to be difficult for guys like me that are evaluating players. And I know that these rules certainly aren't made for guys like me. I just think it's going to be harder for coaches to evaluate guys in these settings. And the adding the two high school weekends is interesting to me because from a handful of high school coaches that I've talked to, I don't think they wanted it. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how the NCAA handles it. Will high schools be allowed to travel to tournaments out of state? The guys that have run Fab 48, Grant Rice, high school coach at Bishop Gorman, has already put something out saying him and Gary Charles are going to run a big national high school tournament in that weekend, assuming that it's approved. Will high schools be allowed to travel to those tournaments? How will they handle players that are in the process of transferring schools? What if a school isn't part of a state association? There's just a lot of question marks to go with that high school portion, and I think this is going to make it harder on college coaches. I even had one high major assistant coach said that their staff is going to spend a ton more money because they're going to have to fly all over the country to see a few guys. And he said that their staff was going to have to put it in the budget to use multiple private planes so they could see as many people as possible during that high school period. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. And I think to that point, the best part about AAU for coaches and guys like me is bringing the best players together from a specific region, and you get to see more good players at the same time. And obviously, there are some loaded high school teams, but for the most part, you're looking at teams with maybe one Division I player. So this is really going to spread things out, and I think it's going to make things difficult for a lot of people. Obviously, some of these rules that they put in place are good for the game. I think allowing players to come back if they don't get drafted is good for the game, but I think they really missed the mark with the recruiting calendar change. Let's shift gears to summer superlatives. I want to talk about a couple specific players. The top performer for me throughout July is Oscar Tshiebwe. This is an absolute monster. 6'9", strong chiseled frame, runs end to end, plays as physical as a player that I've seen. He is extremely active. He rebounds in and out of his area. He looks to dunk things in the paint. He's blocked shots. He just competes on both ends, and I think this guy raised his stock to a degree that he will move to a five-star player when we update the 24/7 Sports player rankings. And I think this kid is the ultimate competitor. He doesn't have ideal size for a center prospect. I'd like him to be a little taller, but at 6'9", it's certainly big enough. But he just plays with so much physicality and so much energy. I thought Oscar was the top performer of July. He certainly raised my eyebrows a little, and I think he just had a huge summer. He had a very big-time showing against James Wiseman, who I think is currently the best prospect in this class. Quite frankly, outplayed him, out-toughed him. Oscar, I think, was the top performer of July. Another guy that I thought was really good in July is Nico Mannion, 6'3" guard out of the West Coast, playing for West Coast Elite and Ryan Silver's bunch. I think for a high school point guard, he's pretty close to complete. He competes on both ends. He's a two-way player. He's a good athlete. He's a very good ball handler. He can create space. He's got good vision and can really pass. I think, especially in this day and age where the primary ball handler spot is full of more combo guards than point guards, I think he's a true point guard that has a nice blend of facilitating for teammates, but also can score. He can really shoot the basketball. This is a kid that's narrowed his list down to four schools, Arizona, Duke, Marquette. Villanova. My hunch says that Arizona is the leader, but there's still a little bit to go. And I thought Nico Mannion had a tremendous summer. A couple players that raised their stock during the July evaluation periods. There was a number of them, as I mentioned, a number of them that moved from outside the top 150, top 200, that are going to move all the way up into the top 75 in the player rankings. Let's start with Akuka Cook. Plays for Mass Rivals, 6'10" power forward, can step out on the floor and shoot, plays with energy. He really raised his stock. Robbie Baran, I mentioned him a minute ago, 6'9" power forward. He's now going to be a high major recruit. He can step out on the floor, he can rebound, he's got a good frame, and he's a good athlete. Cole Bujima, now going to Michigan, 6'6" wing that can really shoot. His game is tailor-made for John Beilein. I thought that was a big pickup for the Wolverines. And I mentioned Caden Shedrick a minute ago, now going to Virginia, 6'10" post player that can run. He's got good hands. He's got a lot of tools. He's not a finished product, but he's got a lot of tools. So I think those four guys in particular really raised their play and raised their stock during the July evaluation periods. And before I let you guys go, I want to talk about the FIBA European Championships. I went overseas for a little over 2 weeks to cover the FIBA U18 A and B European Championships, and then slid over to Serbia for the FIBA U16 A European Championship. And I want to kind of give you guys the best player I saw from each event. We'll start with the U18 Bs that were in Macedonia. Kid playing from Israel, he actually got MVP of the U20s last month. But Denny Avdija, playing for Israel, 6'8", versatile forward. He's skilled. You can use him in a variety of ways. He can shoot the basketball. He's got good mechanics. He's pretty good with the basketball in his hands, but I think he's a good rebounder. I think he can impact the game without having to deck the ball. He competes on both ends. There's obviously still room for improvement, but I think this is a kid we're going to be hearing about for quite some time. He's not going to be coming to the States for college basketball, but I think this is a guy down the road that we'll be looking at as an NBA prospect when he's eligible for the NBA draft. In the A division, a kid that played for Latvia, and that's where the U18 A's were. They were in Riga, Latvia. But this kid certainly doesn't look the part, but Artur Zegars averaged nearly 19 points, 6.3 assists, and 3.4 rebounds a game in the FIBA U18 European Championships. And this kid was absolutely tremendous. He still has a slight body. He's very thin, small, but he does have decent size at 6'3". But this is a kid that I think has a chance to play in the NBA. If I were you, I would go look up some videos of this kid. Very crafty, creative with the ball, good ball handler, very good speed, competes on defense and a pesky defender, knows how to set up guys, can really facilitate and distribute the basketball, but he can score it too. I was really impressed with him. Obviously, there was other guys in that event, like Marco Pekarski, who got MVP of the event. Filip Petrušev, who's going to Gonzaga, is going to be a really good player. He helped Serbia to that title with Marco Pekarski. But Artur Zegars was very impressive and a name you'll be hearing about for quite some time. And then over in the U16s, another kid that I don't think will head to college, but Usman Garuba. He was the best player in the event, put up absolute ridiculous numbers. He's a short 6'8", 7'2" wingspan, strong physical body, the best rebounder I think I've seen at the age of 16, played with so much energy, quick off his feet, really pursues the ball. He also showed pretty decent mechanics on his mid-range jump shot. So Usman Garuba, he's a guy I don't see playing college basketball, plays for Real Madrid in Spain. I think he's a guy that's got a good chance to play in the NBA one day, and when you can rebound the way he does, I think it translates, and I think he's a very intriguing prospect. I appreciate you guys listening to the Sidelines with Evan Daniels podcast. Before I let you go, I want to make sure that you all are subscribed to the podcast, and the best way to do that is to shoot over to Apple Podcasts and or your favorite podcast app. Hit the subscribe button for me, leave a rating, leave a review. You can also shoot me a note over on Twitter. That would be extremely helpful and appreciated. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.